But without further ado, let's get to Tim Manners, who hails from Westport, Connecticut, and he has written a book called Schoolboy, The Story of Weight, Schoolboy Hoyt. Tim, great to have you here. So timely, because, of course, everybody has their fingers crossed that the Yankees and the Mets will have a Subway Series coming up. This is the ace pitcher of the legendary 1927 Yankees that you are writing about. What inspired you to write about him?
Well, the backstory on the book, Bridget, and thanks so much for having me, is that I'm a longtime friend of one of Wade's sons, Chris Hoyt, who is a client of mine. I was in the PR business, and Chris is my client. And short story is that Chris shipped me 8 boxes of his dad's materials, various memoir attempts that he had made over the years, just, you know, a whole collection of interview transcripts, newspaper clippings, recordings, so forth. And he said, here, see if you can do something with it. He was very kind of, you know, upset, I guess you'd say, that his dad had never completed a memoir. He was very concerned about his legacy. So I took that on. And the real gift of this book is that I was able to put the entire book together entirely in Waite's own words.
Right. And, you know, sports stories, even if you're not into baseball or you're not into a particular sport, they boil down to being just such fantastic human stories. So Weight Schoolboy Hoyt, I've been reading a little bit here, part of the 1927 Yankees, as I said, before we get into the particulars about him and his absolutely fascinating life and career, tell us about that special team.
Well, the 1927 Yankees is considered to be by many the greatest baseball team of all time. It was voted as such by the Baseball Writers Association back in 1969. He was the best pitcher on that team, which is quite remarkable. Even more remarkable than that, I think, is that he's so forgotten relative to other players on that team. Not all of them are that well remembered, but of course, everybody remembers Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and the Murderer's Row. There was much less focus on the pitchers of that era. And it wasn't just Wade. It was also Herb Pennock and other members of the Yankees staff. But they were just a powerhouse. And really what was significant about them, and I think in turn makes Wade so significant to baseball history, is they were proof of concept for what constitutes a great team in the modern era. They really set the template of that power hitting and the power pitching. Everybody remembers Ruth and Gehrig hitting those bombs. Less well remembered is Wade Hoyt and other pitchers on that team keeping the score down on the other side. But it's that combination that really defined a great baseball team and continues to define it to the modern day, up to and including today's New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm. And about his pitching, I was reading that I guess he was signed when he was in high school as a junior. Tim, was he one of these guys that I don't know if you remember the movie Bull Durham, but one of these guys who just a lightning bolt hit his arm and that was that?
Well, sort of. I mean, he grew up in Brooklyn, which is kind of the Mesopotamia of modern day baseball. Ebbets Field was being built almost literally in his backyard. His father was a baseball nut and decided very early on that his son was going to be a baseball star. And so he worked on him with his pitching in particular, his throwing, his catching, not so much his hitting. And he very quickly came to the attention because of his prowess on the mound for local high school teams and also what were known as the newspaper leagues, first to the Brooklyn Dodgers and then the New York Giants. You know, he was only 15. He was initially brought in just to pitch batting practice. But when John McGraw, the legendary pitcher of the Giants, saw how talented he was, he decided to sign him as a high school junior at the time, the youngest pitcher ever, actually the youngest player ever signed to anything like a major league contract.
Wow. And gave him that that big bonus, huh?
Well, $5. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't really a contract per se. It was really an option that said that if Wade decided to play professional ball, that his services belonged to the New York Giants. Of course, the sidelight to that story is that Wade's father immediately relieved him of the $5 bill and bought himself a hat.
Oh, nice. I hope at least it was a baseball hat. tell us about his time in the minor leagues. I read that he almost had his hands amputated, literally, Tim?
Literally. Well, that was actually before he was in the minor leagues. He was about 10 years old at the time. He developed blood poisoning, and it was so severe that the doctor said to Wade's mother, you know, either we can try to operate, which would be very risky, or we just amputate his hands. And of course, his mom said, well, he's no good without his hands, so try the operation. Fortunately, it worked, but really incredible when you think about how he made his career after that, that he nearly lost his hands before the whole thing started.
Unbelievable. Okay, so back to the 27 Yankees, and you mentioned the names Ruth and Gehrig. What were his relations like with those two stars?
Well, very mixed. I mean, he became very close to both of them as time went on. But in the early going, he and Ruth really went at it. Wade wasn't quite sure why Babe Ruth became so angry with him that he wouldn't talk to him, and this went on for 2 years. They were both dating the same showgirl at the time, which might have had a little something to do with it. Yeah, uh-oh. But the story was that, you know, in an afternoon game at Yankee Stadium, Wade was pitching, and it was a routine pop-up fly ball, and Babe Ruth just let it drop. And Wade turned around, his hands on his hips, and just glared at him, and they got back in the dugout, exchanged words, and then into the locker room, and the fists began to fly. They actually had a fist fight, Babe Ruth and Wade Hoyt. This actually was one of the first things that Chris Hoyt told me about his dad. My father got into a fist fight with Babe Ruth. You know, how many people can claim that? It just seems almost like mythic in proportion. But it finally resolved itself, only though when Babe Ruth decided that the feud was over, he offered Wade a beer one afternoon, just almost at random, and said, forget about it, kid. We're good. It's over. But they grew closer over time. Wade actually was an honorary pallbearer at Babe Ruth's funeral. And Babe actually named his first child, his daughter, Dorothy, after Wade's first wife. So there was certainly a bond there. With Gehrig, it was a little bit different. I mean, the thing that's a little bit surprising, at least to me, is that when Gehrig joined the Yankees, he wasn't very popular at all among the other players. When you stop and think about it, it makes some sense because he was this Ivy League Columbia kid. He was young. He was seen as kind of immature and kind of a mama's boy in a way. And Wade was sort of skeptical of him. They never really got very close until after Wade's time on the Yankees. He had been traded to the Detroit Tigers and then the Philadelphia Athletics, and he'd kind of gotten out of shape. And so he decided he was going to go ice skating for conditioning. He went to Rye Playland, the ice rink there. And it just happened that Lou Gehrig was also ice skating at Playland, like to ice skate to get in shape. And that was when, and this was more like 1932, 33, that they really bonded. And Wade saw something of himself in Lou. I think he almost saw Lou Gehrig as the inverse of him. In other words, all the qualities, the fine qualities that he saw in Lou Gehrig, he felt he had the opposite. One of those qualities, a key one, was just a sense of gratitude, which Wade really appreciated about Lou Gehrig. And I think that Wade felt that he hadn't always necessarily appreciated the people around him and what they had done for him in a way that Gehrig had.
That's so something.
Ice
skating to get in shape, huh? At Rye Playland of all places. That's crazy. And we are back with Westport resident and author Tim Manners, who has a new book, Schoolboy, about Wade Schoolboy Hoyt, the star pitcher of the legendary 1927 Yankees. So, Tim, we've been chatting for several minutes now, and I didn't ask you why they call him Schoolboy.
Well, it goes to the fact that he was signed at age 15. At the time, that was the youngest player ever signed to a major league deal of any sort. And he looked like a schoolboy. He was very much kind of apple-cheeked, you know, and certainly compared to the hard-bitten baseball players of that era. It was a rough-and-tumble crowd, which didn't make it any easier on him. One thing I should mention and clarify is that when he was signed at age 15, that didn't mean that he was on the Giants staff. What ended up happening actually was he was shipped out to a whole string of minor league teams just out in very remote areas like Lebanon, Pennsylvania. And he was playing with men twice his age. And that was not the best thing for him, either as a pitcher or as a young man. There were all kinds of untoward influences on the road, gambling, drinking, houses of ill repute, and so forth. And the other players weren't exactly nice to him either. They didn't include him in anything, and they often would threaten him, you know, if he didn't pitch the way they wanted him to or whatever, which, of course, for a young man like that was rather intimidating.
Mm-hmm. Is that why you describe him as a conflicted hero, that his success was, in a sense, a paradox?
Well, it was because, and this goes really to his, not to get all Freudian and pop psychological about it, but to his mother and his father, who were very different people. I mentioned that his dad was a baseball nut and wanted his son to be a baseball star. His mother, on the other hand, wanted nothing more than for him to go to college and have a respectable career. And that was sort of the split screen that was really the central conflict in Waite's life, that he followed in the footsteps of his father, but all the while he was looking over his shoulder, kind of haunted by his mother's admonitions, up to and including the point, and this I found incredibly poignant, when he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1969. And keep in mind that the Baseball Hall of Fame only admits about 1% of everybody who's ever played the game. It's not like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where they let in just about everybody, even if they don't play rock and roll.
Right.
But when he gave his speech at the Hall of Fame, his induction speech, he said like all the usual things. He thanked everybody and said what an honor it was. And then he said, but, you know, I could have been a journalist instead. And when I read that, my jaw just dropped. Huh. I thought, what journalist wouldn't have killed to have had Waite Hoyt's career?
Right.
He really felt that way, that despite his incredible success, not only as the ace pitcher of the 27 Yankees, but then a pioneering and much beloved radio voice of the Cincinnati Reds for 24 years, that he could have accomplished all that and more and still felt like somehow he had taken the wrong path. I think that's one of the things, maybe the thing, that makes this book resonate in a way it's maybe larger than you might find in other sort of quote-unquote baseball books, because who amongst us has not sort of considered that, right? What might have happened had we taken another path? But for someone like him to think that way, I thought was just kind of mind-blowing.
Right. How many people with a gift like that would even consider doing something else? But I was also reading the notes about your book that he was sort of a vaudeville star, or at least a guy who hung out with the likes of Mae West.
He was a vaudeville star. His father, in addition to being a baseball nut, was also a vaudevillian, pretty successful one, and basically included Waite in his act even from a very young age. So later on in his career, in the offseason, Waite would go on vaudeville. A lot of other ball players did it, but for Waite, it really was in his blood. He played vaudeville theaters, big houses all across the country, and crossed paths with people like Mae West, the Marx Brothers, Jimmy Durante. The Yankees didn't like this. They thought that it was bad for his conditioning, which of course it was. He would show up for spring training usually out of shape. But the thing about it was that he was making, believe it or not, three times as much money playing vaudeville halls as he was playing for the Yankees.
That's crazy. And then also an oil painter?
That was later in life. It was like there was nothing this guy couldn't do.
Yeah,
everything,
I mean,
he tried.
A Renaissance man in a way,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Almost
crazy.
The kind of guy you hate, right? Because he could do anything he tried. Yeah. He played professional basketball for a time. He was a football quarterback at Middlebury College for the one semester that he went to school. He was an incredibly talented guy, up to and including oil painting. He just decided he was interested in it, started to paint, took some lessons. He sold something like 30 of his works, so it's not like this was amateur stuff, including some commissioned pieces. He actually once said that he was happier painting than he ever was pitching.
Hmm. Yeah.
Complicated guy.
Absolutely. And a fascinating read about him. Before we go, Tim, so we had this 20 plus year career in baseball. Was there a highlight? Was there one moment that, you know, people talk about or a clip that they might play when they say his name?
Well, there's a lot of things that people don't know about Wade Hoy. And that really was, in addition to my friendship with Chris, that was the impetus for this, is that we both felt really strongly that he deserved to be better remembered than he was. But some of the heroics, the one that stands out to me was in the 1921 World Series, which, by the way, I think was the very first Subway Series, as we contemplate perhaps another one this year between the Mets and Yankees. This was the Giants and the Yankees. Wade was pitching for the Yankees. He pitched three complete games, 27 innings in that World Series, and did not allow an earned run, which by today's standards or any standards is just pretty unbelievable. The only pitcher who did something comparable was the great Christy Mathewson, who many consider to be perhaps the greatest, certainly one of the greatest baseball pitchers of all time. So there was that, and there was obviously in the 27-year baseball season, the fact that he was the best pitcher on the best team. In the 28 series, he won two of the four games when the Yankees swept that series. So there's a lot to, you can also dive into certain statistics. Like one of them is in postseason play, his earned run average is 1.83, which is just incredibly, incredibly low. Yeah. You go into the record books and you can find all kinds of records that he held. But I think, you know, obviously his legacy is very much wrapped up in his time with the Yankees, and that, not just the 27 Yankees, but that entire era. As I said, it really set the model and the tone for great baseball teams up to and including the present day.
Tim, I have to let you go in 30 seconds, I know, but I have to ask you, do you think we'll get the Subway Series?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Sure. How could you not hope for that? I mean, and we deserve it, right? You
know? Sure.
two great teams, the Yankees and the Mets, and I think it would just be epic, obviously, to have the two of them toggling between Citi Field and Yankee Stadium.
All right. And as we hope for that in the meantime, folks, you can read Schoolboy About Wade, Schoolboy Hoyt, the ace pitcher of the legendary 1927 Yankees, by author Tim Manners, Westport resident. Great to have you on the program, Tim. Thank you so very much. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, Bridget. Thanks so much.